Okay, so there's a difference between love and attachment. That's a very important one. And there's also a similarity. And the similarity which makes these two things confusing is that with both love and attachment, we feel pulled towards a person. And there's a sense of going towards the person. Whereas in anger, we want to get away. Okay. But there's a big difference in how and why we want to go towards a person when we have love and when we have attachment. When there's a sense of love, we want somebody to have happiness and its causes, simply because they're a sentient being that exists. That's all. Simply because they're somebody who wants to be happy and doesn't want to suffer. That is the only reason necessary for us to have love for them. And since everybody's like that, you know, that love becomes something unconditional and something that can spread equally to everybody. Whereas attachment, which in our society we sometimes call love, because we're so confused about the difference between them. With attachment, there's a lot of strings attached. Our attachment doesn't go equally to everybody. It goes to some people and not to others. And it goes to different degrees to some than to others. And our attachment is very conditional. We're attached to somebody as long as they make us feel good. As long as they meet our needs or do what we want or we receive some kind of positive feeling towards them. That long, the attachment and the feeling of going towards them remains. But when the person doesn't meet our needs, when they do the opposite of what we want, when they lay their trip on us, when they aren't who we want them to be, then our attachment very quickly turns into anger and disappointment and frustration. Okay? So that's one way we can tell if we have actual attachment and love, is to see what happens when things don't go the way we want, if we still have the same positive feeling going towards the person as we did before, or if all of a sudden, you know, our feeling towards them has changed. I think probably in our relationships with family, there's a lot of love and there's a lot of attachment. And although they can't happen in the mind in the same mind moment, you know, sometimes within 5 minutes we might go back and forth between them. And we might also go back and forth between attachment and anger within 5 minutes, very easily. Okay, attachment is based on expectations, on false expectations, okay? And so because we have false expectations, then, or unrealistic expectations, then when these expectations aren't met, we feel disappointed, we feel frustrated, we feel angry. Okay, now, the question comes up, and it came up before, aren't there realistic expectations that we can have of people? And I think that there is, you know, according to different social roles, there's expectations that, you know, as a group, as a society, we have more or less similar expectations in certain roles. And I think that these are valid as long as they're agreed upon. Now, part of the problem is that we may not have agreed on these expectations, and especially if you're dealing cross-culturally. You know, if you have a marriage or a friendship, people from a different country or a different ethnicity, different religion even, sometimes the roles that are expected are different. You know, for example, the role of a husband and wife in this country is different than it is in Italy, okay, or in China. Yeah? And so sometimes when we don't articulate these expectations and we don't have commonly agreed ones, then we can have a lot of friction within a family because everybody's operating under their own set of what they think has been agreed upon. Yeah, but it's simply because we're used to that certain version from our culture, not because we've actually discussed it with the other person. Even within one culture, yeah, we can have so many different expectations that we haven't taken the time to verbalize and articulate with the people that we're close to. Or even within one family, we can have different expectations. Now, the parent can have one expectation of what their role of a parent is. One parent can have certain expectations of their role. Another parent can have different expectations of their role as a parent. And the child could have third expectations of what their parents should be. Okay? So do you see the possibility for confusion here? So it isn't that all these expectations are unrealistic. It's sometimes just that they haven't been articulated upon and agreed upon. Yeah. But then there's some expectations that I think are definitely unrealistic. And we began talking about that before, when we expect one person to meet all of our needs. Yeah. Or we expect a relationship to remain the same way over a period of time without changing. These are very unrealistic. Yeah? So in the case of the first one, when we think, you know, one person's going to meet all of our needs, I think this is a result a lot of pop culture and movies and, you know, love songs and things like that. It isn't in traditional cultures. In fact, the whole idea of romantic love is comparatively new. And in some countries, it doesn't even exist. I mean, if you go to New Delhi, and you look in the classified section of the Times or the Statesman, they have ads for marriages. The parents will place ads, what caste, what career their daughter is, what age, height, weight, looking for a man of this and such. Or the boy's parents will place an ad in the newspaper. These are mostly for the upper classes who can afford this. Yeah? But the marriages are very much arranged by the parents. And this is not everybody does this, not all families, but many families do. And the parents will arrange the marriage. Sometimes the couple meets once or twice before they're married, sometimes, more, sometimes less. And marriage is seen not as this romantic whirlwind of living on cloud nine, but marriage is seen as a joining of two families. And the two families become close because their children are married, and the families have to get along. It's not just a question of the man and woman getting along, but the families have to get along. And it's the marriage, even between the man and the woman, is in some ways, it's a working relationship. It's this, not this romantic buzz, but it's a working relationship. How are we going to create a family? The purpose of the marriage is to have offspring. So how do we create a family? Who does what role in order to create this family? And people go into a marriage with that kind of expectation of it being a working relationship. If you get along with the person, all the better. Yeah. If you don't, it can be hell, but you're still in there. And then, the marriage would evolve where you ignore the spouse and love the children. Okay. But you see, just, by the culture, the whole expectations are totally different. So I think with the idea of romantic love that's happened in our culture, and the fact that especially in America, people can move so far away from their family, that the extended family has broken down, parents, aunts, uncles, all this kind of stuff, grandparents and so on, that's broken down, and instead everybody's put all their energy into one person, whoever their partner is. And I think that automatically is a setup for a lot of tension and may contribute to the high divorce rate in this country, is that, we put everything into one person. So like I was saying before about my friend who's interested in the Dharma and her husband in the Civil War history, you know, if she has that expectation, he's going to meet all my needs in the Dharma, and he has the expectation she's going to be as enthralled with the Civil War as I am, you know, boy, they're going to have a Civil War in their marriage, yeah? Whereas if each person has many relationships in their life so that all their varied interests can be played out with many important people in their life, sometimes friends, sometimes other relatives, then the marriage itself can be much healthier. And I think the same thing for kids. If a child only has their parents to relate to, or sometimes if the family's divorced, the kids only have one adult to relate to, if something happens to the relationship with that adult, then the kid really has nobody to turn to who's older, who they trust for guidance. Whereas if the parents have from the beginning helped their kids to create good relationships with many adults, you know, maybe the aunts and uncles, the cousins, the grandparents, maybe very dear family friends, you know, but you help your kids have many adults, relationships that are steady in their life, then if something happens, especially when your kids hit teenage years and everything mom and dad says is wrong, at least there's other adults that they can turn to for advice. And very often that you find that whereas a teenager won't listen to their parents, if another adult that they have a good relationship says the exact same thing, they'll listen. Okay, but this kind of has to be set up beforehand, helping your kids to have many adults in their life, you know, who can, you know, really help them.